Steve McCabe, the physics teacher and pilot on the panel today with Liz Bowen, clearly from Competency International. Good afternoon, Liz. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Jim.
You've been complaining, Liz, on Facebook. I'll just turn your microphone on, Steve. Liz Bowen, clearly, about people you may know being put into your news feed. You don't like Facebook telling you about people you don't want to know.
It suddenly appeared on my phone, on the Facebook app on my phone, and in the middle of, you know, discussions about really important things like recipes for preserving and the world, you know, world peace and things, I suddenly got all these photographs of people that I don't know and I have no desire to have as friends, and they won't, and you can't do anything to get rid of it. I mean, if they put all some of the stuff they put on, you can just push a button and say, I don't want to see this. But you can't do this with all these people they start throwing at you. So I just suggested to the faceless people at Facebook that they take it away because I don't want to see it.
You don't want to know them.
No.
I did a quick experiment around this over the holidays. I was bored, obviously. And like you say, Liz, there's a whole list of about a dozen names, don't you? There's just like that you can slide across.
Yeah.
And like every 15 posts, there's another list of about a dozen names.
Exactly.
So the first one I came to, I just clicked friend request to all 12 of them, regardless of whether I knew them or not. I just said, why not? Let's just play the game.
Embrace it all.
And half of them accepted my friend request. I've got no idea who these people are, but they're now my fans on Facebook.
Well, I actually protect my privacy on Facebook pretty markedly, and I know who actually got that quote off my Facebook because he is one of my friends and he happens to be one of your producers. But I have very tight privacy settings, so I don't actually want lots of people who I don't know looking at what I have to say. Now, I know that, you know, people can get in and, you know, there's probably somebody watching everything I say and do from mindless spy agencies and things and satellites. But I prefer to make those decisions about Facebook.
Yes, you have a quaintly old-fashioned view of your own personal autonomy.
I do.
Yeah. Now,
you put that very well, Jim. I don't think I could have put it as well myself.
Just reflecting the times. While we're talking to you, before we talk to Steve, how's your dog?
Oh, he's gorgeous, Archie. He's a 14-week-old golden Labrador who already weighs 15 kilos. He's huge. And we brought him home about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago. We did a quick up and back to Auckland with all the other dogs overnight, picked him up and brought him back with everybody sitting in the back of the car sort of bonding. And he's just delightful. Unfortunately, he's not quite yet toilet or not chew trained.
All right. Otherwise lovable. Archie, name of Archie.
Yes, he is very
And I understand, just quickly, you've been having a stoush with Porirua City Council.
Oh, I remember a few years ago I talked about this, actually on the panel, in the racetrack that is the street that we live in. And over Christmas, actually on Christmas my day, and I cannot believe this, my daughter got a warning and a notice because she had actually parked her car halfway up on the footpath to try to make it a bit safer, because when people come around the corner and there are lots of cars there, it's incredibly dangerous and you can't see. And she got this warning infringement notice. So I saw red and started sending messages to them on their Facebook site, and they came back, and then I got this sort of distinctly patronising letter from the person in charge of traffic management, who informed me that they had minor safety works allocated out, but only that he needed to tell me that only a third of them got done in any 1 year.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that they put these into the plan, but they actually only ever do a third of them. So I don't know whether them trying to sort out the racing track is going to have anything to do.
Is your daughter getting off or not?
Oh, no, it was just a warning.
A warning, okay.
Yeah, but it was just really annoyed me because I thought, here had she been trying to maximise safety.
Yeah.
And I got this sort of pompous letter.
Well, someone I know who's a paramedic got an actual fine, I think, for doing what she did, trying to make the roadway more safe by yeah. parking two wheels on the curb while attending an actual incident inside a house, and got clipped for it.
I know. I mean, if they've got the money to send people out to do that, I'd really like it if they could put some road warming, what do they call those things, you know, humps that slow people down. And also it would be really helpful if they'd cut the foliage that cut out all the traffic vision. So you can't, when you come out of your driveway, you take your life in your hands, because you've got people treating it like a speedway. You can't see them, but you've got to turn. So anyway, I've been having this
no revenue in cutting foliage, Liz.
No, I know there isn't.
Liz Bowen, clearly. Steve McCabe, back at school.
Yes.
Oh, the joy.
Yes. It's finally happened. We went back to school. My school went back today. And, you know, it's terrible. I'm finally back in the real world again. I've had this, you know, the last, like, 5 weeks we've had off, and it's been wonderful. We've got loads of things done. We've made wine, and we've made cheese, and we nearly made soap this weekend, but we couldn't quite get the kit together in time. We've done all kinds of things.
You've lived life.
Oh, to the fullest. We've extracted honey from the hive. We've had a fantastic time, and it's been absolutely glorious.
I thought you were doing preparation and marking. And
oh, of course, that as well, yes.
Of course, yes.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, in among all the other things, we just do it at home after waking up at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's fantastic. It's lovely. And so it's great. And teachers spend the entire of the summer in this little bubble where we're in denial. We know at the back of our minds that the holidays will end and that school will start again, but we choose not to think about it. And I know it's denial. I know that's all it is. And then about a week or so ago, we all got a letter from the school that came in the post, and it's just reminding us, you know, here's the schedule for the first week, and we'll see you all again next Thursday. And it was rude. It was just such a shock to have the bubble burst that early, because, you know, the denial ended, and suddenly, you know, the reality is suddenly, you know, your nose is rubbed in it, and the ephebophobia starts to rise, and you know it's coming, and there's nothing you can do about it. And today rolled round, and there were no kids in today, so, you know.
Well, schools are much better without children in them.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be shocking next week.
Are you sure you want to continue this as a profession?
You know what? Where else would I get these long holidays?
You should not be saying that in a public space, Steve.
No, well, let's
PPTA have just had bananas instead of kittens.
Let's talk about the right attitude in teaching.
Absolutely, yes. What's Mr. Keeping saying?
The government will spend nearly $360 million over the next 4 years on a new strategy to lift student achievement in New Zealand schools. The new education policy unveiled during John Key's first major political speech of election year, delivered in West Auckland to business people today. And the money will primarily be spent on trying to improve the performance of teachers and principals by paying those who are seen as excellent performers more money. But it's not the traditional performance pay. It'll become clear as we discuss it if you haven't heard any details of this so far. Those teachers and principals will not only be expected to be role models for their own schools, but also a community network of schools. And the Prime Minister says there are still some details to be worked through, but he expects the first new roles to be established next year. And Tom Parsons will join us from the Secondary Principals Association shortly, but I'm sure you've got one or two things, both of you, to say about it. Does it sound like a smart strategy?
It sounds like a confused strategy, because it sounds like there's a ridiculous amount of overlap with things that already exist, and it sounds like it's a strategy that's been put in place even though no one was asking for it and no one thinks it was necessary. Can we just review very quickly there that there's four new roles. Mm-hmm. The two principal roles, okay? We've got the executive principal, who's going to have leadership over a community of 10 neighbouring schools. So if you're one of the 9 principals who's now suddenly got an executive principal over you, are you in some way emasculated? I mean, how does that work? I'm not sure I'd want to be one of those 9. Being the tenth, you know, the executive principal will be fantastic. Extra 40,000, all the extra powers, brilliant. We've got these change principals coming in, okay? They're going to apparently get paid an extra 50 grand a year to turn struggling, underachieving schools around. Now, that presumably means that the incumbent principal, who has been governing over and presiding over the struggling of the school, will presumably be relieved of his position. Otherwise, I mean, you're not going to give the same...
Or will be subordinate. Actually, can I ask you just, by the way, where's the role of the school inspectorate? Where's Eero?
This is a very good question. I mean, right now, there's something else that comes to mind here. Eero right now have a mechanism for dealing with struggling schools. They start off, they put an advisor in with a board of trustees. They will appoint a limited statutory manager to take some of their authority away from the board. If necessary, they'll disband the board and put a commissioner in. There is already a strategy in place to deal with this situation. Now, They're saying right now that how many? 20 positions are going to have these change. 20 schools have these change principals. Will it be Aero that nominates the 20? What if they don't? They think there's more than 20.
There'll be advisory boards, I think.
Yeah,
panels.
Panels, yeah.
Well, again, where does Aero fit into this? The whole thing is very, very strange.
What about the teachers themselves, these lead teachers and these expert teachers?
We've already got them.
Yeah.
They're called specialist classroom teachers.
And they're also called heads of department.
Exactly, yes. There are people who are already getting paid to do this job already.
Yeah.
Why we need another several thousand of them, I don't know. And also, where will these fit into the secondary teachers' collective agreement? There is a document that already governs the way that school teachers are hired. These positions do not exist within the STCA. Now, the PPTA, and I'm not speaking on their behalf at all, they are giving a very guarded welcome to this new move, but that we're gonna, when our next contract round comes up, we're going to have to figure out where they fit into.
All right. Okay, can but I just take us back to first principles and all of this?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Now, John Hattie is always quoted, so I decided I'd quote John Hattie today. So I went back to the paper that he wrote in 2003, which is Teachers Make a Difference, What is the Research Evidence? And he identified a range of variables or factors that created variance of achievement. And I'll just go through them because I think it's really important. Students account for about 50% of the variance of achievement. It's what students bring to the table that predicts achievement more than any other variable. That's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Home accounts for about 5 to 10% of the variance, considering the major effects of the home are already accounted for by the attributes of the student. But it does affect quite strongly the levels of expectation and encouragement, etc.
Yep.
Schools account for about 5 to 10% of the variance. So, and according to Hattie, schools barely make a difference to achievement. Principals are accounted for in the variance attributed to schools and mainly in relationship to the climate and influence of the school. Peer effects are about 5 to 10% again, and then teachers are about 30%. So if you actually do the lowest count up on that, 65% of the variance in schools has nothing to do with teaching. Now, I and I'm not in any way suggesting that teachers aren't critically important, because we know that they are. But I keep, having Hattie quoted at me, so I decided to actually quote Hattie back at people. Because what this is doing is saying, if you put in executive principles and change principles, how much impact is that going to have on the variance and achievement of the learners?
Okay, so you're really saying deep down, although we don't want to get too airy-fairy about it, that in fact it's the state of society, the home, and all sorts of outside factors that are the most crucial, whatever you do in the schools.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm quoting from the person that everybody quotes from, which is John Hattie.
Okay, fair enough. And it's an interesting point you've introduced. Let's talk to Tom Parsons as well, the president of the Secondary Principals Association, kindly joining us. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, how are the nation's principals, I know it's early on, receiving this new initiative? What do you think?
Well, although the form of this new announcement by the Prime Minister today is surprising to some, the essential ingredients have been around for a long time. And I listened to Stephen, I listened to Liz, and despite what they've said, this is a game breaker. This is a superb, innovative approach to lifting achievement in New Zealand, but above all, raising the status of the profession, all of the profession in New Zealand. So I go back to that. This is really good news for education, for every student in New Zealand, past, present, and future. Now, if I can just unbundle that a little more before everyone starts getting in, and I'm certainly not going to quote Hattie. The idea of an executive principal or whatever the name happens to come out with, and you'll appreciate that the devil's in the detail, this will help break down what we have got at the moment, which has been identified many times, Council of Education Research, Kathy Wiley's latest book and so on, that turns around and says that tomorrow's schools, one of the unintended consequences has been the detrimental effect to achievement by competition within schools, in between schools. Now, with an executive principal keeping an overwatch over 10 schools, and it may have been missed by Stephen, Liz, these schools can be Kura, Kaupapa, preschool, primary, intermediate and secondary, sitting around that table and deciding what's best in accordance with the progress, the public information assessment tools that have been put out. How can we best make a difference? And the executive principal can encourage other principals to turn around and share best practice, share the resources. All manner of synergy comes out of that.
So you're talking about cooperation, not competition. But Tom, aren't there versions of this already? Surely there are.
It's growing. It certainly is growing, but it is not considered at the moment part of career progression. There are a number of principals that go into a principal's job are change agents, and I'm not just talking about a change principal, but they have been change agents. They've taken a school from zero to hero. What do they do then? What do they do now? They either apply for a bigger school, and the stats indicate that male principals apply for schools with greater numbers, female higher decile rating, or they sit and they continue to do the same thing they've done before, with or without some good PD.
Okay, well, now, panel, Tom's talking about a new fluidity and freeing up talent within schools, and that's what he's discussed. Steve, your impression of that, first of all?
Well, one thing that gets me is that we're talking about how we can take care of principals even more here. And it occurs to me, as I'm looking at some of the numbers that are being bandied around here, that this is quite a slap in the face for a classroom teacher. A principal who's going to be a change principal who, I mean, let's be honest, that's basically somebody who's doing the job he was appointed to do, is going to get paid an extra $50,000 a year. That's more that that increase is more than many classroom teachers get paid. So this is a huge amount of extra money that's being found for principals to do their jobs. Low decile principals...
No, Steve, if I can interrupt there, that's not true. There is only 20 change principals, and those 20 change principals may well be going into schools that, for a variety of reasons, cannot get good, effective change principals.
But I think that, again, I have real concerns about this, and it takes me back to some work that I did in South Africa at the beginning of the century. And one of the things that happened over there was I was working in a different area, but leadership is leadership is leadership. And one of the things that was happening was that some managers who had made a success of dealing in one context were then moved into another context to try and have the same effect. And the problem was that you had the variables within the context which made it, and I had one in particular who had actually failed. He'd been a fantastic manager in one context and he'd failed in the other one. Now, what's to say that these change principles who've succeeded in one context are actually going to be able to make that difference in another? And I just think that you know, there's a whole pile of assumptions in this that I would like to see teased out somewhat.
Okay, let's let Tom answer that. And Tom, with also the rider, that if you're a really good teacher, you're going to be flat out teaching anyway. These 5,000 lead teachers, where are they all going to get the time to be inspirational and charismatic?
Well, again, as both your panel indicated, they're already there in school at the moment. They're not necessarily recognised. Now, the specialist classroom teacher is not necessarily the lead teacher in the areas that we may want. They are quite often are used for confidential advice and guidance to the student, to the teachers that are struggling, and so on. So there's a different role there altogether.
Where do heads of departments come in, Tom? Isn't that the role they're supposed to be taking? That's part of their job description.
The heads of department quite often are not the best teacher in their department. And I think that there are many heads of department who would agree with that. There are some people that come along that are innovative, that have more energy or less energy, but a smarter way of doing things and so on. And the lead teacher positions recognise that as something to aspire toward as a teacher, not going into a head of department. You've just indicated the example that you used with taking a leader out of one position, putting it into another position. is sometimes there's not much correlation. That's quite right, but that's what we've been doing for a long time with the lead teachers and the expert teachers. We've been recognising their leadership or their expertise, and we've been promoting them and taking them out of the classroom. That doesn't make sense.
Tom Parsons, thank you. That's all we've got time for today, but interesting to hear your reaction. Tom Parsons from the Secondary Principals Association. I know this is a favourite topic of both of you. Quick comments before we leave it.
Very quick, well, quick as I can make it. First of all, it's interesting to know that it was John Key who announced this new initiative, not his Minister of Education. And secondly, you know, when we've been told over the years that there isn't a single penny left for pay rises, there's something magicked up £90 million a year. Thanks, guys.
I think this is performance pay in disguise.
Now,
I'm not actually disapproving of performance pay. I think that if people have a set of measurable criteria and can meet those and produce good outcomes, bearing in mind the other stuff that came out of Hattie's research, then I think that's fine. I just think that it's a way of putting performance pay in that pretends that it's not and that it's about learner achievement. And it's manifestly, in my opinion, not.
Is it also in a way the kind of charter school philosophy and microcosm, you know, we need outside oomph, we need that, because Tom used the game changer metaphor. I mean, is that philosophy prevalent in this announcement today too?
Well, I think, you know, with all due respect to Tom, and in no way making any suggestions about his probity, but principals would say this, wouldn't they? Because they're the ones who are going to be advantaged and be given a career pathway that they haven't got at the moment.
Well, Tom's no longer here to defend himself, yes. So I'll move on. It's 28 past four. Before the news headlines, there's been a lot of online reaction to recent run-ins between motorists and windscreen washers in the Bay of Plenty. And in the most recent incident, a windscreen washer broke a woman's wiper on her car, left her six-year-old son petrified following an encounter at a Rotorua supermarket. There's some fairly dramatic video on YouTube of altercation. Emma Wright said her son begged her not to get out of the car after the incident at the Fenton Street store on Sunday. What is your attitude to itinerant windscreen washers, please?
I just have a large dog that sits in my car, and if somebody comes up to my car and I have the window down significantly enough, and the dog woofs very loudly and bares its teeth, and it's amazing how quickly people disappear from around my car.
All right.
I don't care for it at all. The Rotorua case, obviously criminal damage. You get people who are requiring you basically to provide them with money for something that they've decided that they want you to buy. No other trade, industry, profession requires you to buy their services or goods. This one does.
Councillor Murray Chong, does he sum it up when he says that the more unpleasant, uncouth, violent, whatever, window washers queer the pitch for everyone else? In other words, if they were all friendly and amenable and didn't mind if you didn't give them a dollar, would you mind so much?
Well, no, it's the fact that they come along and do it, and then it then puts a requirement on the driver. You are now expected to pay or be made to feel bad about it. That's not the way that business works. It's not right.
Well, I think that if they come up, you wave them away and they still do the service, well, then you've declined to pay in the first place.
All right, Liz Bowen-Cluley and Steve McCabe on the panel.